When God has had enough, how does he respond? Today, Pastor Ray Bentley points out the biblical answer.
The wrath of God is not, as some people think, oh, you do something bad and God zaps you. He throws some lightning bolt at you, he gets you. The wrath of God is God stopping to keep you, or there is a point he gives them over to themselves. What you say, well, what about all the bad things that happen to these people? They do it to themselves.
Spread the news. All of his people coming down before the King. Lift your voice. Jesus is coming. Join the song. Sing along. Let it ring.
Welcome to Maranatha Radio with Pastor Ray Bentley. Maranatha, bringing the message of Christ's soon return, the whole gospel, to the whole world. Some have a mistaken notion of God as our hot-tempered oppressor who art in heaven, who is looking to crush those who dare to live a life of joy and liberty. The Apostle Paul knew better, and he said so. Today, Pastor Ray shows us God's grace and mercy, but also his wrath on those who rebel.
Okay, Colossians chapter 3. And the picture that Paul is giving here is of, you remember when Lazarus was in, he was dead, and you know that Jesus came. He came on the fourth day, and then he said, Lazarus, come forth. Now, I like how one commentator said, it's very good that Jesus said, Lazarus, come forth, because if he had just said, come forth, all the dead would have come back from the grave, because he is the resurrection and the life. So he was very specific, and he said, Lazarus. But now, here is the humorous part to me, is Lazarus coming back, I mean, basically like being dead, asleep, and then waking up, and being all mummified. And then I try to imagine, what was that like to have died, come back to life, and then realize you're all wrapped up, and then he comes out, you know, to the mouth of the cave, oh, you know, like some monster, and the first thing Jesus said was, get his grave clothes off. Why? Because those grave clothes were for a dead and then decaying body. Well, I'm not dead anymore, I'm alive. Get these grave clothes off. Now, Paul is using that analogy, and so it's a very obviously vivid and graphic one for you and I. You and I were dead. We died in Christ, we died to sin, and now we've been resurrected. And the grave clothes are the old habits and the old ways and the old life before we knew the Lord that are gnarly, they're nasty, and decaying and rotting, and we need to, and Paul says, get it off. Take all of those old grave clothes and get rid of them, and then put on new clothing. I'm sure that's, Lazarus couldn't wait to take a shower and get new clothing on. I'm alive. I want the clothes of a living man. So Paul is using that very graphic analogy for us to encourage us, if you're risen, if you're resurrected, if you're new, if you're alive and you're not dead anymore, put off the old things and put on then the new. So beginning in verse 5, here are the things that we're to put off. Therefore, put to death your members which are on the earth, fornication, uncleanness, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry. Because of these things, the wrath of God is coming upon the sons of disobedience. In other words, Paul is saying, putting off our earthly nature is not easy. Those grave clothes want to hang on. They want to stick to you. They want to stay with you. And there's some Christians that really make no effort to remove the grave clothes. And there is this idea, once we get beyond the freedom and the grace and the gift of salvation, once you actually begin walking with God, there are going to be things that you need to put to death. And Paul writes of putting to death both sensuality and materialism. Paul says we are literally to slay these passions that are so destructive, no matter the blood and the pain. And he basically says there in verse 5 that sexual relationships outside of marriage are sin. Now, having said that, let me also say this. Sexual desire is built into human beings. God made us that way. God wants us to be that way. Those desires are good, they are right, they are healthy, and we are made in the image and after the likeness of God. But God has given to us a manual of instruction of how there are boundaries, healthy boundaries. And by boundaries, I don't mean like some people in the world say that, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that. God is not about what you can't do. It's He wants us, yes, this is what you are allowed to do, but this is the healthy way to do it. Paul was saying that what was happening in Rome has a lot of parallels with modern American culture, that there were no boundaries sexually. And that moral indifference fueled uncontrolled erotic passions. Now, what happens when that goes on is then you get misguided sexual desires, which then breeds sexual excess. And whenever a society gets to where there is sexual excess, invariably there are half of the other people who are being used and or abused. And it breeds unintended consequences. So what God was saying, with beginning with His word in Mount Sinai, and then even with the new covenant, is, hey, the desire, good, healthy, God designed. There is nothing wrong with it. But here's how it works. And so there are healthy boundaries to ensure that you can have a lifelong enjoyment of this gift of God. So Paul is saying for the worldly, no boundaries, and it just keeps getting pushed further and further out and becomes self-destructive and so forth. He says, put those things to death. And then he says, and covetousness, which is idolatry. Covetousness, another word for it is greed. I want what I want. I have a right to have what I want. I have a right to be happy. There is a greediness of acquisition that really is the same passion before that expressed itself in lust that is now directed in other ways, but it's the same problem, and it will lead to the same ruinous end. Greed is a ruthless belief that everything, including other people, only exist for my personal pleasure and purpose. And what happens over a whole lifetime with no boundaries of passions, the person becomes more and more and more and more selfish, and gives less and less of themselves, take more and more and more. And what it does, it turns our desires into idols. So now my passions, I don't worship God. I want to do what I want to do. Well, so what you do is you worship the desires that you have. You idolize your own desires. And here's the other irony. When a man or a woman gives into, instead of worshiping God, and they indulge every desire and every passion and every thing that they want, God also wired us in such a way that you will never be happy. You will never be fulfilled. You will never be at peace, and you will never actually find any satisfaction. How terribly tragic is that? Don't give in to greed. Cut it off. Put it to death. It's idolatry. So, verse 6, he says, because of these things, the wrath of God is coming upon the sons of disobedience. Now, I just want to take a couple of minutes and talk about the wrath of God. I will say that there are a lot of churches modern churches that are saying, hey, we want to be able to be seeker-sensitive, and seekers who are not yet Christians, they don't want to hear about the wrath of God, and they don't want to hear about sin and a lot of these harsh things, and so let's just emphasize the good things and the good news and the positive aspects and the blessings and all of that. And hey, I love all the positive things. I love the gospel. I love the good news. I love forgiveness. I love talking about heaven. Wonderful. But I've also found in my life that if there is something that I don't like or is uncomfortable for me, even if it's true and I put it off, it has a way of crashing into my life and world anyway at some point. And usually, if I've tried to keep it out and it comes crashing in, it comes in a way that I don't, that is worse than had I sat down and said, okay, don't give me the unvarnished truth. I want to know the truth. What is this all about? There is a best-selling book right now, or that's been out for a while, called Conversations with God. Thousands of people have bought, and it gives kind of what I call this new version of God. Kind of lifts the God, takes some of the good stuff out of the Bible, but then adds a whole new character to this new God that you can have a relationship with. This God never gets angry. He never, ever gets angry. In fact, probably a good word to describe this God is he's kind of chummy. He can be your chum. He doesn't really want to talk about so much sin. And with this God, there's really no right or wrong. Everything is a little bit situational, and he smiles on everything that you do. And all he's really asking is, do your best. Now, in contrast to that, what does the God of the Bible say? Well, we come here to verse 6. He says, because of these things, the wrath of God is coming upon the sons of disobedience. In Romans, the wrath of God is revealed as his turning sinners over to themselves. Think about that. A lot of people have this wrong idea. God gets angry. And by the way, anger is not sin. It is a human emotion, but apparently it's also a divine emotion in whose image we are made. Ephesians says, be angry, but don't sin. God gets angry. Somehow this misnomer has crept into the church, and I think part of it is cultural, that to be really spiritual or to be a Christian is never to be angry. That's not, number one, it's not honest. Number two, it's not possible. Number three, that's not the way God is. And number four, it's not the way we're made. You're going to get angry in life. You're going to have these times of anger. It's what you do with that anger that makes the difference. But specifically about the wrath of God, Romans chapter 1, verses 18 through 32 is the only place in the New Testament that defines what the wrath of God is. And when you read Romans chapter 1, verses 18 through 32, where it's defined for us, here's what you find. Three times the verb is used, God gave them up, or God gave them over. He gave them up to this, and he gave them over to that. And basically, what it means is that God stops trying to reach out and change someone. Because when we sin, you know, like a parent, when you see children do something wrong, you want to stop them. I remember my mom telling us not to run into the street because we had this little yard and kind of a busy street that went around to a high school. And there was a lot of traffic on it, and people would whip around the corner. We were the second house in. From the corner, and so over and over and over again, you know, don't play in the street. And then one time a ball went out in the street, and we went out there and we grabbed the ball and then saw my mom, and I'd never seen my mom so angry in my life. And she, you know, disciplined us. We're crying, why? Well, as a little kid, I couldn't understand, but as a parent, I can understand the fear, the terror of seeing a child hit by a car, which happens. Or for that matter, trying to take a knife and, you know, stick it in through the little electrical switch outlet or whatever. No. You know, mom and dad, you know, they want to stop you. So also, God sees what's happening in the world, and he does everything he possibly can to say, don't do that. Don't run here. You're going to get killed. You're going to get wiped out. Don't go there. Don't put the knife in that thing and you're going to get electrocuted. Don't do that. It's out of love. It's out of wanting to help us and save us and preserve us. But apparently, it's possible to say no to God, and you reach an age where, you know, if you are that stubborn and that hard-headed and that rebellious, and you keep on and on and on, no, 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 stay away from me. I'll do what I want, when I want, how I want. I don't want your help. I don't need your help. That's it. God will still love you. He'll still pursue you. He'll still chase after you. But at a certain, there is a, apparently a time, we don't know when, a line that is crossed, we don't know where. And finally, and out of the grief and brokenness of heart, God says, okay, I give up. You don't want me. You have made that clear. I have done everything. And so I quit. I give up. There's an interesting phrase in the book of Genesis. It says, God's spirit will not always strive with a man or a woman. And oh, how sad when God gives up in that way. In other words, people who deliberately desert God, though he strives with them, there is a point he gives them over to themselves. And essentially, you know what's interesting? So the wrath of God is not, as some people think, oh, you do something bad and God zaps you. He throws some lightning bolt at you. He gets you. Ah, I got you. That's not the wrath of God. The wrath of God is God stopping to keep you, or he finally just takes his hands off and says, I give up. I quit. I let you. You've made your decision. You've made your choice. And it breaks my heart, but I let you go. That is the wrath of God. He just gives up. And so what you say, well, what about all the bad things that happen to these people? They do it to themselves. What's happening in this world right now, God isn't doing things to us. We are doing these things to ourselves. The book of Revelation says that in the last days, the whole thing that turns into the end of the world, or it's not the end of the world, but leads to Armageddon, is God finally, he takes his hands off and says, okay, you won't listen to me. And when he takes his hands off, we go to this war where we would destroy every human being on the face of the earth. And that's, we do it to ourselves. Much of the judgments in Revelation, we do to ourselves. And then Jesus, though, comes and says, unless those days were shortened, no flesh would survive. But for the elect's sake, I will shorten those days. That's the mercy of God and the grace of God. Now, God's wrath can also be redemptive. I think of the story of the prodigal son. When the son wanted to leave, the father didn't say, no, you can't leave. Here, put him in handcuffs and throw him into some room under lock and key. You can't leave. Oh, his son was of age. I don't know how old he was. Maybe, 18, 19, 20, early 20s. He said, look, I'm a man now, Dad. I want my money. I want my inheritance. I want to go. I don't want to hang around here. This is boring. I want to make my own life. Give me my inheritance. And with a grieved heart, the father said, okay, there it is. Son takes off, goes into a far country. He let him. He did not prevent him from running away, did not prevent him from going to a far country and ruining his life. The father gave him his freedom. But you remember where the son ends up? He ends up in a pigsty. In a pigsty. For a Jewish boy, this is not where you want to end up. This is like the worst. And then he comes to himself and he says, man, I don't have any food. I lost all my money, all my friends. I had all these friends when I had money. Now that I have no money, where's my friends? I have nothing. And now I'm in this stinking pigsty. And he started remembering home. Wow, my dad, he actually treated his servants pretty good. They paid him a fair wage. He goes, I know he'd never accept me as a son. I've shamed his name and the family. He goes, but maybe if I go back and humble myself and say, look, Dad, I know I'm not asking to come back to the privileges of a son. I wasted that. I lost that. But if you'll hire me as a servant, that'll be quite a few steps up for me. I will accept that, and I will be thankful. But the father runs, throws the robe around him, gives him the ring, fatted calf, party. My son has come home. But there, the idea, in other words, is that the father letting go resulted in some waking up and coming home. Oh, there's nothing sweeter than that. So even that kind of anger and letting go can bear, in many cases, healthy and good fruit. Look with me in verse 8. He says, "But now you yourselves are to put off all these, anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy language out of your mouth. Do not lie to one another, since you have put off the old man with his deeds, and have put on the new man who is renewed in knowledge according to the image of him who created him." So we're to be renewed, constantly growing in Jesus. We never arrive. In verse 11, he says, "Where there is neither Greek nor Jew, circumcised nor uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave nor free, but Christ is all in all." There's no categories, no barriers, no hierarchy. Everybody's equal. Everybody's a brother. Everybody is a sister. Everybody is a member of God's family. And then in verse 12, and I will leave with this, so we start to get on the positive, which we can follow up later, but he says, "Therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, put on tender mercies." Be compassionate, be tender-hearted toward one another. "And kindness," he says, "be kind to one another." It's important that you should be more sensitive the older you get. If you're the worldly person without God that grows older, gets more and more less sensitive, let's say. But a true man of God or woman of God becomes more and more tender, more and more sensitive, and more kind. Now, some of you will remember a guy named George Bernard Shaw. Have you heard that name? He was a very brilliant man, wrote some plays, and he was also an atheist. But George Bernard Shaw once wrote a letter to Winston Churchill, then the Prime Minister of England. And this is what George Bernard Shaw wrote. "Enclosed are two tickets to the opening night of my first play. Bring a friend, if you have one," in parentheses. He was kind of a mean, grumpy atheist. Anyway, Winston Churchill brilliantly replied, "Dear Mr. Shaw, unfortunately, I'll be unable to attend the opening night of your play due to a prior engagement. Please send me tickets for a second night," parentheses, "if you have one." And that really has nothing to do with anything. I just thought it was a great story. But it does bring back to the issue of, you know, be kind. Be kind. Kind and tenderhearted one to another.
Good encouragement from our studies in the book of Colossians with Pastor Ray Bentley here on Maranatha Radio. And today's broadcast is available on CD for just $7. You can get in touch and ask for the message by title. It's called Putting on the Ritz. And you can now get Pastor Ray's entire series in Colossians on a single CD. MP3s of every one of Pastor Ray's messages from this series on one compact disc. Order online at maranatharadio.com. Or address a letter to Maranatha Radio, 10752 Coastwood Road, San Diego, California, 92127. Well, Pastor Ray, your book, The Holy Land Key, is not only based on your years of biblical study, but it's based on some unique relationships you've enjoyed with people in the Middle East.
You know, that's very true. I had no idea, Dave, but the Lord kind of spoke to me, and he just said, "Hey, you know, you tell the story, you teach the story of prophecy, son, I got some surprises for you. You're going to be stepping into the story." And when I took that adventure with the Lord, I found myself literally in the office of the current Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, and sharing the things of the Lord with him. And it was a powerful, incredible opportunity and experience. And that's part of what I get to share the story about in the book, The Holy Land Key.
He's a thoughtful man that really is trying to do his best to lead that nation.
You know, he is. The whole world being focused on Israel, and right now focused on the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu. We're living at one of the most exciting hours in human history, and we get to share and tell some of those stories in the book, The Holy Land Key.
All right. Well, why not get a copy for yourself? It's available to Maranatha Radio listeners for just $10. To get a copy, write Maranatha Radio, 10752 Coastwood Road, San Diego, California, 92127. Or order it online at maranatharadio.com. Next time, join Pastor Ray for more from our studies in the book of Colossians. More from God's Word next time on Maranatha Radio. Maranatha, bringing the message of Christ's soon return, the whole gospel to the whole world. Maranatha Radio with Pastor Ray Bentley is an outreach of Maranatha Chapel, 10752 Coastwood Road, San Diego, California, 92127.